RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to this Thursday, December 12th edition of the Landry Football Podcast, brought to you by the great folks at Radio Influence as we take you through a different element of football conversation. And we want to get into a couple of things that kind of left hanging last week, one in particular, or on Tuesday, rather, that I want to get into that I think is really important. And it's kind of closing out a coaching search. And then want to get into some things about how you evaluate players late in the season, particularly on the NFL level. So want to really get into, want to remind you about a couple of things before I get into that. LandryFootball.com is where we've got all the in-depth film room analysis on the college game, the pro game, and certainly all the inside information that we have in our notebooks on what's going on in these coaching searches. Obviously, the remainder of the NFL season, the College Bowl season, we've got it all for you over at LandryFootball.com. So check it out, our holiday discount, 50%. We appreciate you joining us there. We want to finish out closing out a coaching search. I was asked a question, and we went into some of the coaching searches and the dynamics, but closing out a coaching search can be somewhat challenging depending upon where you are and the politics involved in your program. Certainly when you're dealing with the politics of boosters, their involvement, getting their hands in it, those things sometimes hurt your ability to close a deal. You've got agents now, as I've said before, agents that are representing coaches are the biggest change that we've had in coaching searches, in that they have the advantage. When you have a small handful of coaches that represent most of the people, they can manipulate and put one against the other and have real opportunities to create the best for their client, and that's their job. The school very often is in a situation where an athletic director may have one coaching hire in his entire tenure. So he's very inexperienced on how to do it. That's why they often turn to search firms to help them with background information, to lead them in the right direction, see who might be interested. So it makes it easier for them. People say they should be athletic directors, should be experienced, the athletic director should be able to hire a coach. Well, in theory, that sounds great. How the hell do you know how to hire a coach if you're not in the business? You know, and as an athletic director, these guys are mostly fundraisers and they're political brokers and they don't come from a football background and they have to rely on secondhand information and they get manipulated a lot. And that's pretty much everyone with a few exceptions. So it's easy to say that, but the people that are criticizing it wouldn't know how to hire a coach themselves. Of course, everybody in the media does it and thinks they know, but they don't know anything about these coaches. They don't know anything from a good coach to a bad coach. They just know the record. They don't know the circumstances. So they don't understand the in-depth side of the game to be able to make a prudent decision. So what you get is a very disadvantageous position for the hirer, and the school that is often at in a very difficult spot, so to speak. That's why they spend the money, they make money, so they get some assistance. They not only use a search firm for background, but they certainly rely on people that are in the know, and they have to trust someone that's involved in the process. And so I think what you see is often difficulties sometimes through the search, but specifically closing the deal. Do you have the authority as the athletic director to do it? Is it through a board? Do you have different factions on the board that wants to have their guy, or a booster that wants to have their guy? Those things are roadblocks to getting a deal done. It's one of those things that you look at and have to understand that the level of authority that you have as a decision maker is difficult. We saw it recently in the Arkansas coaching search that they had a hard time closing a deal. And it's nothing against Coach Pittman, who may do a good job. But the reality is he was a compromise candidate with a lot of people that had a lot of their hands in the cookie jar and involvement in it that created a tough environment. So how do you do a deal? Well, the best way to close a deal is you have to have the ability to close it. Okay, somebody has to have the authority to say, look, we're going to do this, and look, I have to make this decision, and this is who I'm going to go with. But when you have people that are boosters that have money, they don't like it, then that could affect your job. So there again, it starts from the top in the authority, and hope that you have boosters that are supportive without trying to be manipulative and be selfish. So if you don't have that, you're going to have a hard time. If you have that, and hopefully you do, then the key is to be able to figure out how to have a plan in place of who you want. But you always have to have a backup plan. I've said this before. And the way you close a deal is you're aware that there are other openings. And you should be aware of where your job would fit in the hierarchy of jobs that are available. Of course, everybody says, we think we can win championships. We think we're as good as anybody. All of that, that's fine and dandy. But the reality is you need to know truly where you are in the pecking order. So when you look through your candidates, you know, you should know the viability of who's interested and not. And much like recruiting, it's no different than recruiting a player or signing a player in free agency. You like a player, but you need to make an offer. You need to make a good, fair offer, fair to them. You have to jump on their side of the negotiating table and figure out what's good for them. And I think you need to explain it to the agent. This is what we want. And look, this is the offer, but you know, if you're going to sit there and play us against somebody else, then you know, we're moving on. So a good offer and set a timeline, realistic, and you know, this is what we're going to do. And at some point, you move on. It becomes difficult in this day and age where public perception is, you better get candidate A, you know, high-profile guy A, that's the guy. And if you don't get A or B, then C's not going to be sellable. Look, to hell with that. Quit trying to win the press conference and win the hire. So one of the things that you need to try to do is focus on doing the right thing and not worry about public perception, because the public can't hurt you if you make the right decision, and they can't help you if you make the wrong decision, and they're going to turn on you if you make the wrong decision. If you do exactly what they want you to do and it doesn't work, then the same people that said you should hire candidate A are the same people that are going to turn around and say you should be fired because you hired candidate A. So you don't pay any attention to that. What you have to do is go in with a plan. Now, if there's a distinct difference between, hey, you really want this guy, and there's a big drop off to option B, well, then you may have to go in with the idea that, look, this guy I think is appreciably better. He's worth that much more, and we need to go and get it. But the same thing applies. You make a great offer, and you feel you've got a really good job, and you've made a great offer, and they don't bite on it, meaning the agent, the candidate, then you pretty much know you're being played. You're being leveraged. So you need to swallow your pride and go on and move on to your next guy. And sometimes it works out. You see it with LSU. Jimbo Fisher and Tom Herman is who they wanted. They got Ed Orgeron. Did Joe Oliva deserve credit for hiring the former athletic director at LSU? Deserve credit for hiring Ed Orgeron? He does. But he also was his third option. And he basically did it for all the wrong reasons, from a timing standpoint, just from a PR standpoint, and it worked out. So sometimes it takes a little luck too. And if you put a guy in that maybe is not the most popular at the time, you've got to augment that with the search around him. So with the staff around him, excuse me. But the search has to be clear, defined, and you have to, as I tell administrators, don't have a list. Have a list, but you better grade them, and you better get people that are qualified football people to grade how many people, 10 people, 12 people, whatever. Grade your critical factors on what you're looking for in a coach. And let me tell you what's most important, and grade them like you'd grade a player. And when you grade a player by putting verbiage on those critical factors and a number on those critical factors, then you can have a worksheet that can tell you who's graded out the best to fit that criteria. You'd be surprised how often the guy fourth on your list is actually the best candidate. You just don't realize it because you're thinking one way. And realize if you do it objectively, maybe there's more public perception to go with candidate one and two, but four is actually the best. You don't know that. Do the exercise. It's worth your time. It's your job. And I realize it's very in-depth, but that's what you should do. And you should do that at all times when you don't have an opening. If you have that, you're going to have a list that's a little bit longer than you might think. And your candidate jump from candidate one to two may not be as precipitous of a drop as you think. And look, you have to be careful, like in recruiting or in free agency. You can sit there and hope and think that it might happen and give them extra time. But if you're not working your second choice and you're not ready to pounce on your second choice, you're going to lose that recruit, that free agent, that coach. And then you're not going to go down to two. You're going to have to go down to four. And again, maybe when you truly evaluate, fourth is definitely not what you wanted, but what you settled for. Or in the case of like Arkansas, or some cases where you have compromised candidates, where it's not ideal for either side faction, which again you shouldn't have multiple factions within an operation, but this guy is the most satisfactory to all involved when the reality is you just don't have everybody on the same page and you end up settling. And what you hope is that you can maybe build around them, and it may work. Like in the case of Arkansas with Sam Pittman, it may work. The coaching search was a mess, but you might end up falling into the right candidate. It happens sometimes. And I just alluded to one like at LSU, and that happens quite a bit. Sometimes you have the perfect search, the perfect fit, and it still doesn't work out like you had hoped or thought. A lot of the hires that people think are great turn around and say, boy, they're awful down the road. So the key is to be able to close a deal. Ties into what I said in the last conversation about you have to have the backup plan. The backup plan is your key to closing up your one option. Because if you put pressure to get a deal done, if they don't bite on your deal, they're waiting for something better. Okay? You can sit there and double negotiate. So let's say candidate is coaching last week in the conference championship game. Said candidate is interested in two jobs or perceives to be interested in two jobs. Well, if that's who you want, you go and you try to get them. And you say, this is the offer. We want it done that night. So you finish your game. We want an answer that night. And set a deadline. If you don't get that answer, you go on to the next set because you're working another guy. And you might, depending upon his options, maybe slow play him a tad, but you certainly can go to the line without going over it where if your number, if your guy, your first guy passes the deadline, then you move on and you quickly consummate that deal, you know, within the hour to your other guy. So that's really how you close a deal. You close a deal by having other options. You have to be willing to move on. Now, in a case like Alabama, when they hired Nick Saban, man, they looked at certain guys. They weren't great fits. And I got to tell you, if they hadn't hired Nick Saban, they were in a world of hurt because they really were turned down a few times. Mal Moore was a hero, the late Mal Moore, but he was a hero because he went on a plane and he wasn't coming back till he got Nick Saban. Had he not gotten him, who knows? Who knows how many coaches they'd have been through in the time that Nick Saban's been at Alabama. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out going forward. You know, in coaching searches, you just go and you have a plan. You have to execute the plan, and you have to have some deadlines. as we enter the latter part of the NFL season, we often talk about games that may be teams that are out of the playoffs, and maybe from a public standpoint, it's not real exciting, not real important whether one team finishes here or there. But there are a couple of things. You're evaluating players late in the season, like you evaluate players every game. But late in the season, you really can learn a lot about a player's heart and focus on attention. It's easy to get guys focused and sharp in attention to details when they're in the playoff hunt. When they are not in the playoff hunt, then what happens is they tend to become a little bit more, take it a little easy, not work as hard. You can, that shows up on film. And certainly it's noticeable if you're inside the building, who's doing what in your preparation, in meetings, the level of attention to detail. All those things from the standpoint of evaluating film, you can see how guys perform and the effort they have when they're way up in a game and they're way behind in the game and late in the season when they're out of the playoff chase. That is, the film is your resume. And certainly as you're coaching a player, you have a lot more information on them. The inner workings of them in meetings and the weight room, conditioning, so on and so forth. So it is really important, and it tells you an awful lot about where you want to go with a guy. It also tells you a lot when a guy, okay, he's in a contract year, he's playing hard. How did he play after he got his previous contract? I want to know that because that's the guy I'm going to get, not the guy that I see right now. So you have to factor all that in. So when you evaluate late in the season, it's really important, but it's also important to compare that evaluation to the film grade notes that you had and the scouting reports that you had on the player the year he got his contract. Really important to look at. One thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, too, is before I get to finally with a question is one of the problems that we're having in this current day and age with college football calendar is these coaching searches coinciding with recruiting, which is next week. It has taken the recruiting class of the first class, basically, is almost not on the new head coach. In essence, it's a byproduct of the work of the previous staff, good or bad. So, you know, what you have to do as a staff is you have to come in, depending upon, and I do think this matters in your recruiting area, you have to quickly look at key guys, a handful of guys that are pivotal, that are difference makers. Do you believe in what the previous staff had evaluated? Because oftentimes, you may not have as high a grade on a player that the other staff did, but because of the recruiting cycle, the drop from that player, even if you don't have them graded as high, the drop to the next guy is significant to the point where it would be a huge drop, a precipitous drop on where you need to go if you don't keep him. So oftentimes what recruiting is when you first get the job is just hold a recruiting class together that was already put together by someone else. That's basically what it is. And then it's maybe putting some other guys in the mix that you think you can get, maybe that you can flip And a lot of that is about sitting down when you get the job. Certainly there's holdovers in the staff that can help you to get a feel for what is the reliability of the recruit, meaning is he wavering or is this a guy that potentially could flip that's maybe committed to another school? I think you have to work all those angles, and it's all about numbers. But I can tell you that certainly it takes a full year, more so than ever. You know, it's one of the reasons why I have said that the current calendar for college football doesn't work. And it's simple. Early signing day should be in August. Kid wants to commit early, have him commit in August before senior year in high school. Simple as that. Don't have a December signing day. It doesn't make sense. Have an early signing day, have an early signing day. And then take the second signing day and put it in March. And then what you would have to do is you would have to have a coalition of agreement that there's no coaching hires that take place until after the bowl game. So basically, you can't make coaching. January would be the month for coaching changes. You make those changes. You make the assistant coaching changes. You got the entire month of January for that. You've got the entire month of February to work on recruiting and have in the middle of March, early March rather, you could have signing day, and then you got time for spring practice. But, you know, the calendar doesn't work because you have coaches that can't coach their bowl games trying to put a recruiting class that together 1 week after you sign on as a head coach. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Greg sends in a question and a reminder that if you've got a question that you want answered on this podcast, go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, and let me know. Greg asks, where would you rate Joe Burrow on your list of all quarterbacks you've scouted? Who's the best college quarterback you ever scouted? Well, look, here's the thing about it. It's a different era. So I've scouted a lot of quarterbacks in different eras that maybe played for 4 years, certainly 3 years before early entry draft guys. You know, Archie Manning was great. Elway was great. Marino was great. But it was common that guys stayed longer, 3 years, and certainly before that, 4 years. Joe Burrow, he had a good year last year, but this was obviously the pivotal year and the key year. This year is as good as any I've seen, certainly in a long, long time. And I'm on record at saying that not only does he have the physical skills, but the intangible qualities that it takes to be very, very successful at the next level. And I would rate him very, very high. When it's all done and I put my final grade on him, he's going to be graded very high. And talking with teams, knowing that I know him and the family real well and have a good feel for him, my feeling is that he would be outstanding. So that's how I rate him. Hey, we appreciate you joining us today on this podcast. And we hope that you check us out again. If you've, got a question, let us know. And we will address it on a future podcast. Check us out next week. Enjoy Army Navy. And hope you enjoy maybe the division, the smaller college division, 1AA games. We'll be getting ready into the bowl season next week. And obviously the stretch run of the NFL. So a lot of good football left. We hope you enjoy it. And we'll be here to break it down for you. Over on Landry, LandryFootball.com each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at LandryFootball. And we'll be breaking it down right here on the Landry Football Podcast. So long, everybody. Have a great weekend.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Hey gang, Jerry P. Tuck here, co-host of A Place for My Head. Each week, Brandon Thompson and I are going to be talking about the importance of mental health. We're going to be talking everything from stress, anxiety, different mental illnesses, different chronic illnesses, and frankly, the rigors of everyday life and how we all struggle to get through it. We're not medical professionals, but we are looking to start that conversation that needs to be had about the stigma around mental illness and how it affects us every single day. We'll talk to experts, but at the end of the day, A Place for My Head is all about real people with real stories about real life. Check out A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and myself, Jerry P. Tuck, each week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.